Jonathan Hood, weeknights on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
So Jake Bentley chased and dropped at the 15-yard line. Roquan, the chef, Smith.
Roquan Smith, he's the highlight show of this defense.
In the ring, Steamboat's got him up. A slam.
Abreu massacres this ball to left center field.
Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood. Weeknights on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
What's up and welcome in. You're listening to ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood, weeknights at 7. So glad that you're with us. With open phone lines for you at 312-332-ESPN. 332-3776 is the telephone number. Hit me up on Twitter, twitter.com, tweetjhood. Also on Facebook, facebook.com. Say what's up to you guys listening and watching on Periscope. Thanks so much for tuning in. This hour, we will hear from Nick Friedell, who covers the NBA like a blanket for ESPN.com. We'll get his thoughts about the Bulls, about the Warriors, about some of the other storylines around the NBA. The Bulls are just getting beat down by the Golden State Warriors in the fourth quarter. And all throughout the game, by the way, there's records being set. Klay Thompson. And it's just one of those things where the Bulls are, it's one thing for the Bulls to take on the Warriors. The Warriors have beaten a lot of teams down. But with the Bulls, when you're shorthanded and you're just not very talented, these things happen. So if you were going to the game, definitely you were there to see the Warriors and see really the Harlem Globetrotters of the NBA in front of you, which is just, they are just an amazing team. And so we'll hear from Nick Friedell coming up at 9:30. But right now, let's take a look at the state of the NFC North. You know, the Bears won against the Jets. It's a game I thought the Bears would win. I think they can beat Buffalo coming up on Sunday. And it really, it's not about Styles points. What it's about is, it's about trying to get better every week. And with this Bears team, I think that we're seeing some good signs. Again, for those that look at the Bears and say, well, they beat the Jets, who they really beat? Oh, they beat Tampa, who they really beat? It's hard to win in this league. Very difficult. And so it's just not some fait accompli that teams will roll over for the Bears. Could you imagine if the Bears would have lost against the Jets yesterday? Could you imagine if they lost in the games they were supposed to win more times than not? 4-3 is a surprise. I think that Bears fans should take solace in the fact that they're not at the bottom of the NFC North and struggling to win. They're 4-3 with an identity, and they're trying to get better every week. So let's take a look at the Bears versus other teams in NFC North. We start first with the Green Bay Packers.
The Green Bay Packers.
We turn to Bill Michaels from WSSP in Milwaukee. We'll get his thoughts now. As the Packers, they fell short. They lost their game in a big way against the Rams. And Bill Michaels joins us here on Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. Bill, as always, I appreciate your time. Tell me why you think Green Bay has been so inconsistent so far this year.
Well, I mean, if you look at their offense, you know, as much as we want to talk about the defense and how, you know, Mike Pettine's kind of getting them together, the uncriticizable Aaron Rodgers can be criticized. He's a $170 million man. They are number four overall in yards on offense. They are right in the middle of the pack when it comes to scoring, and they're in the lower third when it comes to converting on third down. I mean, they have had a lot of problems. He's overlooked guys to try to make the big play downfield, and in doing so, they don't move the sticks. Their third down conversion has killed them, and the fact that they don't convert inside an opponent's 35. At one point, they were only 4 of 18 as far as scoring goes inside opponent's 35-yard line. So for as much as we want to point our finger at the defense or maybe look at Ty Montgomery and the special teams play and such, I mean, let's be honest. The offense is what makes this thing go, and when the offense isn't clicking, this team will suffer. And the fact that they brought in Jimmy Graham, he was supposed to be a scoring machine, and we had all reported about this great chemistry he and Aaron Rodgers had during training camp, the OTAs, and coming into the season, and it just hasn't materialized. Now, granted, you've seen Jimmy Graham with a bad knee, and he's had to get it iced down during games, but that still doesn't excuse the fact that Aaron Rodgers is just kind of overlooking him. So I know it's sacrilege in this area to ever criticize a quarterback, but I'm doing it. I think this is on Aaron Rodgers right now.
But despite all that from the Rams game that I watched yesterday, and you saw it just like everybody else, you still are pretty optimistic that, you know, maybe you're a player or two away from winning that ball game, but you're really optimistic going into the New England game based on how they played yesterday, right?
Oh, absolutely. The fact that they went toe-to-toe with what's considered to be the best team in the National Football League on the road, on the West Coast even, that says a lot. I think they learned a little bit about themselves in an otherwise painful or ugly loss, if you want to call it that, but I think I don't think New England is as good a team as maybe their record indicates right now. I think they're a good team. I don't think they're the great team that we've seen Bill Belichick and Tom Brady kind of lead before. So I think they're gettable. I think the Packers could go in there and get a win. But I'll tell you what, this is a gauntlet for the Green Bay Packers. They had to go to L.A., then they go to New England, they come back home and they face Miami. Then they got to go back out to Seattle on a Thursday night and then turn around and come back and then head the road again and go into U.S. Bank Stadium and take on the Minnesota Vikings. This will be the defining five games in their season in which they're either contenders or they're looking for a new head coach.
The voice of Wisconsin sports, Bill Michaels, with me, Jonathan Hood, on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. So Bill, did you feel that the Rams personnel, especially with the skills positions, were better than the Packers since you saw them up close?
I think that the Rams are good in every aspect. There's not one area where they're weak. They've got, although, you know, obviously they were missing one of their top wide receivers. But, you know, when you look at this team top to bottom personnel-wise, they got beef up front. They can run the football. Gurley is tremendous. Goff has really come on as a decision maker. They've got good specialty guys. Their defensive front seven is as good as any in football. Their secondary may be a little bit weaker, but for the most part, I still think they're pretty good. And then their special teams have been really solid. The Packers, coming out of a bye week, went toe-to-toe with them. The Packers defensively played about as good as they possibly could play. Their young guys are starting to come of age in that secondary, but they still don't have a consistent pass rush, and that is absolutely killing them. Teams are looking at Mike Daniels and Kenny Clark up front in the middle, and they're running away from them. As long as you can stay away from those two guys against the run, you're going to be good. And they don't have a consistent – Clay Matthews is not the Clay Matthews of 2010. He's good. He's not great. He's a guy that you have to pay attention to but no longer have to double-team consistently. So this team is still looking for somebody else, and they're not going to find it right now. What they're going to find is in the offseason they're going to have to go after somebody that's actually going to make an impact in some way, shape, or form. Ted Thompson's drafts the last 3 or 4 years, he netted a couple of guys that are playing, but for the most part, go back to 15, 16, and 17, they just haven't been good. And so when you look at those drafts and a draft and development program, and if you don't get starters or Pro Bowlers out of that, you're setting your team back, in essence. And I think that's what Ted Thompson did. I think they let him go probably 2 years too late, and now you're seeing this team pay for it. And they're running out of time because the window on Aaron Rodgers is obviously closing over the next 3 to 6 years.
Last thing, Bill, and I appreciate your time. I'm surprised that there's no separation with the teams in the NFC North, because year after year we talk about how difficult the division is, but none of the teams seem to want to separate. Do you see a team that's going to be able to emerge out of this thing?
Well, I still think the best defense and the best overall team is probably the Minnesota Vikings. I really like what they've done down in Chicago and the fact that they've continued to bolster it year after year. It began with bringing in Danny Trevathan, and it's only gotten better. And then obviously the deal with Khalil Mack. It's unfortunate that Kyle Long ended up getting injured yet again, so that weakens their offensive line. He's been kind of that inspirational guy coming back from injuries. I think that Trubisky's starting to feel it. I think he's gotten a little more freedom in Nagy's system. But I still think the Vikings are probably the team to beat. But everybody, if you look at this division, everybody's got a flaw. You've got a young quarterback that's trying to learn it down in Chicago that's only getting better. You've got a quarterback that some believe in and some don't, and not a great offensive line in Minnesota. You've got a weaker defense and right now a dysfunctional offense in Green Bay. And you've just got an overall kind of an average, very vanilla, bland team in Detroit. So right now it's going to be the team that kind of pieces it together over the next 6-7 games that really begins to separate themselves from the rest.
Bill, as always, I appreciate your time. Thanks so much for coming on the show.
My pleasure, buddy.
The Detroit Lions.
We turn to the Lions now. Let's go to the Detroit Free Press and say hello to Dave Burkett, and he joins us here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. Dave, as always, I appreciate your time. Thanks for coming on the show.
Not a problem. How are you doing today?
I'm good. Watching the Lions in Seattle yesterday, it's one of those games, to me, from my big screen television, it seems like just all three phases just didn't seem to work well for the Lions. Can you tell me why you thought that they fell short yesterday against the Seahawks?
Well, I think there's a couple of reasons, and you're absolutely right. I mean, it was a bad game all the way around for the Lions. They, you know, three turnovers on offense. They couldn't run the ball. They couldn't stop the run. Special teams were a mess. But, you know, a couple of players after the game said, Ricky Jean-Francois in particular, said that, you know, he didn't think the Lions were focused enough. And Golden Tate had mentioned that their practices during the week were off. I don't know if that was the case. I saw it more as just the Lions getting out physical up front, really, on both sides of the ball. I mean, this was a team that, you know, they played pretty well the last couple weeks. They ran the ball really well against the Dolphins. But when they tried to do some of that Sunday, they just could get nothing going on offense and defensively. Even though they added Damon Harrison, they had no way of stopping the Seahawks offense. And I think those things, things started to snowball. When the turnovers picked up, there was nothing the Lions could do to dig themselves out of that hole.
I want to get your thoughts about Lions as far as where they are as an organization, because it's got to be maddening, right? You're not awful. You're not the best, but you're in the middle, and that's just got to pull your hair out if you are ownership, if you're the coaching staff, because there's talent there. You know, you and I talked before the season. You thought that it was a roster that still has to build. What do you think now through seven games as far as the overall roster for the Lions?
Yeah, I think especially the way that it's happened is, you know, that's part of the maddening thing is you come out and the NFL sort of gift wraps you a week one game, right? Sam Darnold first start Monday night, you know, rookie quarterback on the road, and he's playing at Ford Field, and you come out and you lay an egg there, and Stafford throws four interceptions, and, you know, the Lions just look disinterested in even being out there. And then you come back a couple weeks later and you beat Tom Brady and you beat Aaron Rodgers. And so you've strung together some really good performances against, you know, two of the best quarterbacks in the NFL. And then, you know, you come out and you get handled again by a mediocre Seahawks team. So I think that's really what it is just the lack of consistency from this team, that they win games that they shouldn't, you know, they lose games that they should. And those are some of the things that really, you know, rile up a lot of Lions fans over here.
So Dave, when you look at the NFC North, and it seems to be up for grabs now because you got two teams that are 4-3. Two teams are 4-3, but Minnesota's 4-3-1. You see what Green Bay is at 3-3-1, and Detroit at 3-4. So when you look at the hierarchy of the NFC North, where's the Lions amongst those other three teams?
Yeah, I mean, they're in last place, so I guess I'd put them fourth right now. I mean, but there's no doubt that they're a team that can beat anyone on their schedule, or maybe anyone but the Rams when they play them in December. You know, I mean, they've proven it already against Aaron Rodgers, albeit a hobbled Aaron Rodgers. You know, they've played pretty well against the Vikings the last couple of years, and I know this is a different Vikings team, but look, I mean, this is, you know, the Lions, they have some pieces, right? They finally have a balanced offense with Kerryon Johnson. They have three pretty good receivers, and their offensive line is playing well. And, you know, defensively, they're not stopping the run well, and they're not getting turnovers. But, you know, they do have a couple players on that side of the ball. Darius Slay is a really good cornerback. Obviously, the addition of Damon Harrison, we saw what he did at nose tackle the other day. So they still have some pieces on that side of the ball. That's why it's maybe not that complete of a roster, but they're the type of team that, you know, they're going to end up right around that 500 mark, and they're going to win a couple games here where you look at them and you say, man, that team should, you know, they look like they can do some damage in January. And then you're going to look at some games like they had against Seattle, and you're going to say, man, this team, you know, they probably should be picking in the top 10.
Dave Burkett from the Detroit Free Press with Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app as we take a look at the Detroit Lions. You mentioned that Rams game on December 2nd. The schedule maker does no favors here the next five games with teams over 500. I mean, how do you look at that? Because two of them was against the Bears. There's the Vikings, there's the Panthers in there, and you mentioned the Rams on December 2nd. How does this roster, how does the ability of the Lions be able to get through that juggernaut?
Yeah, no, Jonathan, you're right. I mean, that's I think especially why you know, people were kicking themselves over the lost opportunity against the Seahawks, a home game the other day, is because now you got a stretch of five straight games here where, you know, really they could lose any of them. I mean, back-to-back road games, division road games coming up. then you got a red hot, you know, Panthers team coming in, then the Thanksgiving game, and then that Rams game out now or here, you know, but against the best team in the NFL in early December. And you know, look, I mean, the Lions, they're probably going to have to get to 10-6 to make the playoffs. I mean, that's historically what it is to get a wild card berth. Maybe you can squeeze in at 9-7 if everyone in the NFC North is beating each other up. But that means the Lions can afford two more losses from here on out. And if you assume the Rams is one of them, like I do, that means they're going to have to win one of these next two road games against the Vikings and the Bears.
This is not a question as much as it's just an observation from Matthew Stafford. From our standpoint, you know, covering these teams, it's just refreshing for someone that's ahead of the team like Matt Stafford to pretty much tell you what you saw, right? And that we all saw that on all three phases, they didn't play well. In his press conference, like toward the end of one of his questions, he just kind of just opened up and said, you know, the things that happened. It's so refreshing to have players like in this reality era, I think we are in, to be able to say, yes, these are things that we didn't do well, and we got to clean those things up. So at least there was some truth there from Stafford.
Well, I'll say this. I mean, he's not a guy who shares much of anything when it comes to him or the team or anything. I mean, he's a good guy to talk to in the locker room, friendly, but he's kind of bland when you put him up at the podium. And I just think that was the case yesterday where, look, it was pretty obvious. I mean, they were bad all the way around. You know, they fell behind, 21 points early, or, 21 points in the second half, but 14 points early at least, and they gave up those three straight touchdowns, and they just got nothing working. And you know, Stafford, I will say this about him. He's, when he plays a bad game, when he does things wrong, you know, he's critical of himself, and he's very accountable for the mistakes that he makes. And I think that was part of that yesterday too, right? He had the fumble and an interception in the fourth quarter, the Lions trying to come back. So he knows that he at least shares in the blame of what happened on the field.
If this doesn't work out well with this Lions thing, you could always ask for a transfer to the Pistons beat, because they seem to be playing a lot better as of late.
Yeah, I mean, everybody thought after that little hot streak the Lions got on that they were the best team in town, but I think, that's quickly turned, and maybe people are hoping the Pistons can go on a little run here, because, look, between the Tigers and the Red Wings, there's not a whole lot else cooking in Detroit sports right now.
Detroit Free Press and Dave Burkett, as always, I appreciate your time in Chicago. Thanks for coming on the show.
Not a problem. We'll talk again.
The Minnesota Vikings.
We move now to the Minnesota Vikings as we go to KFan in Minneapolis. Friend of the program, Henry Lake, joins us here on Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood here on ESPN 1000. Hello, Lake Show. How are you?
Man, I'm doing well, Jay Hood. It's been a while since I chatted with you, but I'm always happy to be on the airwaves with you.
Absolutely. So I watched the game like most did, with the Saints beating the Vikings 30-20. Why did the Vikings fall short in that game at home the way they did?
Yeah, it just, it was such a kind of a weird game, actually. And going into it, one of the things that I said on the air yesterday morning was the fact that I felt like that when you looked at the two teams going in, that, yeah, that New Orleans is going to come in with a little bit of a chip on their shoulder. And, yes, the Vikings, they have plenty to play for as well, because they're trying to win the NFC North. But I really felt like the matchup wasn't conducive for a Vikings victory, even though they were at home yesterday. And the reason why I said that, and it rang true, is just I felt like going into last night's matchup, the Vikings right now are just a banged-up bunch. When you look at Anthony Barr not playing, him being out with a hamstring, Xavier Rhodes is one of the best cornerbacks in the entire National Football League. And I really feel like, the Thomas kid from the Saints is going to have a lot more yardage than what he had last night. And clearly, when Drew Brees only throws for, 121, you expect that the Vikings will win that game. But it boils down to this, Jay Hood. They ended up having some very key turnovers at some crucial times, and that essentially is what New Orleans was able to do. They were to take those takeaways and convert those into points.
If you were to give a letter grade to the offense of Kirk Cousins, what would it be at this point through 7-8 games of the season?
Through the entire first part of the season, I would have to give Kirk Cousins. I would have to give Kirk Cousins, I'd have to give him a B. And the reason why I give him a B, I'm talking about a solid B, not a B-minus, not a B-plus. I would have to give him a solid B, because the part of his game that he has to do a better job with is taking care of the football. He's had some issues in terms of some fumbles. And he had that same fumbling issue from time to time in Washington before he got to Minnesota. The other thing that's really been something that's been a detriment with this game has been the fact that he throws a lot of footballs every single game. He's getting like two or three footballs batted down at the line of scrimmage. And everybody here is wondering, like, what the heck is up with that? So he's got to do a better job with taking care of the football and with the batted balls. But all in all, I think he's played well to position. Now, of course, you're going to look good when you have some phenomenal wideouts and Diggs, and you got Adam Thielen and all the historic stuff that he's doing, and then you have some other nice complementary wide receivers as well, and a solid tight end in Kyle Rudolph. But I right now, I'd have to say that I would absolutely be giving Kirk Cousins a solid B.
Henry Lake from KFan in Minneapolis with Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. So the receiving core for Minnesota with Diggs as well as Thielen, they're the best the Vikings have had since blank. Can you fill in that blank for me as we play match game?
Oh, there's no question that they're the best receiving tandem that they've had since Mawson Carter. You know, and I'm not saying that they're on the level of Mawson Carter because those guys are Hall of Famers, and I clearly don't believe that Diggs and Thielen are there, and I don't even think they'll approach being that good. But these guys are pretty darn good, man. And I think it's one of those deals where both of those players, they're great in their respects because of how hard they work. There were times where, and I was bearing the witness of watching Randy Moss and going out to Winter Park and putting the microphone in front of him and hearing from Denny Green and all of those great Minnesota Vikings teams. Those guys had extreme amount of talent. Everybody knows how good Chris Carter was at Ohio State. Then he got into the league, was with the Eagles, and he kind of flamed out there because of the drug issues and came here and had the emergence as a Minnesota Viking. Those guys had extreme talent. Here, Adam Thielen and Stephon Diggs have talent, but it's more so their work ethic. Those guys grinded out each and every day, and that's the reason why I think that they're the best tandem you've seen since Mawson Carter.
I thought it was really odd on that P.J. Williams pick six. Yeah, Stephon Diggs is a much better wide receiver than that. I just thought that was just an odd play. You mentioned how quirky that game was. There's some things that was uncharacteristic, I thought, about the Vikings offensively, and that play accentuated that, I think, in a big way.
Yeah, it was a big play, but clearly because it was a pick six. But the biggest thing about that, though, was you saw that those guys weren't on the same page. You could see that Kirk clearly thought that Diggs was going to continue to go on that route, and he stopped short, and that's what created the pick six. But the biggest play of the game, essentially, occurred in the second quarter. At the end of the first half, remember the fumble? The fumble mm-hmm. with Adam Thielen, who he's as hard a worker as you're going to find in the National Football League. And those type of bad breaks will happen from time to time. And believe you me, as a Minnesota Viking fan and a guy that grew up here, we've had our fair amount of bad breaks, mm-hmm. especially with the field goals and such. But when you look at the Adam Thielen play, they were leading by three at that point in time. At the end of the first half, it was about a minute and a half, maybe about a minute remaining in the first half. You're up 3-13-10, and you're driving in. Okay, you're marching in for 7, and then on that specific play, defender picks up the fumble and runs about 50 to almost 55 yards down the football field, and essentially a couple of plays later, you get an Alvin Kamara touchdown. So that flipped the script. Instead of going in at halftime being up 20-10, or at worst, you know, if you kick a field goal, well, I shouldn't say at worst because we have troubles kicking, you know, all across the board throughout the years with the Minnesota Vikings. But let's say that it's 16-10. Okay, you're going in with a lead of 6 or even maybe 10, and then all of a sudden you find yourself in the locker room trailing by 4. That momentum, because I was in the building last night, that was a game changer. And it seemed like it really took the wind out of their sails the entire rest of the evening. Now, as a professional, you gotta pick yourself up and say, you know what, Thielen's our guy. He doesn't make those mistakes typically. We're going to go out and we're going to ride out for him in the second half, and we're going to pick ourselves up. But that was very deflating of a moment for not only the Minnesota Vikings team, but also for the fan base and all the fans in the stadium.
So how do you look now at the NFC North, Henry? I mean, because it just seems like it's up for grabs right now. How do you see the ebb and flow of that? Because I had the Vikings winning this division before the season started, but now it seems like everybody's got a chance for it.
Yeah, everybody's got a shot at it. I'm with you 100% on that. I clearly do believe that the Vikings are the best all-around team when they're playing at their peak potential. I believe that when you look at what they're going to be able to do here in the second half of the season, right now they're 4-3-1. I think that they win 6 out of their remaining 8 games, so I think that they're going to end up with 10 wins. Because I think that the 2 losses, I think that they'll probably lose against the Patriots on the road, and I think they split with the Bears. I don't see them sweeping the Bears, although people here in Minnesota say, you know, we're on another level than the Bears, but we got to prove that. But, you know, and with the Bears' defense being so good this season. I just think that they're a 10-win team, and I think that they'll probably squeak out being the best team in the NFC North, but it's clearly up for grabs right now between the Bears, the Vikings, and the pesky Green Bay Packers. And the Green Bay Packers, you know, when you got Aaron Rodgers, you're always going to be counting in on a conversation when it comes to the NFC North. So it's a 3-team race. That's it.
My friend, as always, I appreciate your time. I'm looking forward to seeing how this division shapes up. Chicago looking good, though, especially when Khalil Mack comes back. That only accentuates what they do defensively. But, you know, you beat Buffalo, you beat the Jets on Sunday. You know, it might be a dogfight toward the end. We'll see.
Absolutely, man. Hey, I will say this. You know, when you look at this NFC North, I think the biggest thing that has occurred here in the year 2018 that has really shook up the division is clearly the Mac trade and you guys getting his services. That has changed the entire dynamic of what this NFC North is, and it's been a good one.
All right, man. As always, I appreciate it. Thanks for coming on the show.
All right, take care.
It's Henry Lake from KFan in Minneapolis with us here on ESPN 1000, the ESPN app. Some NBA conversation with Nick Friedell that is coming up next.
I'm not internationally known, but I'm known to rock the microphone.
Hey, yo, Jay Hood. Talk that barbershop talk, dude. You're listening to my mans and them, Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
You're listening to ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. Under the hood with Jonathan Hood. So glad that you're with us. We turn to a man who covers the NBA and the Golden State Warriors like a blanket for ESPN.com. It's Nick Friedell, and he joins us here on ESPN 1000. Hello, Nick.
My man, how you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm doing great. If the Warriors were a musical act, what would they be? So what are you covering, Drake? Are you covering Beyonce? What are you covering?
Beyonce. It's got to be Beyonce. I mean, the best. I am covering the best basketball team I've ever seen. If they stay healthy, Hoodie, they will go down as one of the very best basketball teams of all time because nobody's going to beat them. They have that much talent. So, absolutely, as far as pure talent, they're number one. As far as showmanship, they're number one. I mean, They are the total package.
You never thought you'd be the beat writer for the Globetrotters, but you are. I mean, they're just that good. Everybody else is the generals. I want to talk about a column that you wrote on ESPN.com about chemistry, because that is so huge when you're so talented. And this is with the 90s Bulls that deal with the Lakers and their heyday and the Celtics. You all got to deal with chemistry. You might have a lot of talent, but you got to make sure all egos are in check. So I want to ask you about your column regarding Kevin Durant and Steph Curry, the comfort zone between them. How has that improved?
Well, Steve Kerr made the point, Hoodie, that in year 3, they just know each other better. And I think all those guys, when you talk to them, Steph, KD, the veteran players, they hated the way they started last season. And part of that was because the preseason was very strange for them. They took that long trip to China, came back. They never caught a rhythm early on. This season, they're just unbelievable, especially Curry and Durant in the last 3 games. They are shooting better than anyone in the league. And the difference between Curry and Durant right now and everyone else is when they step on the floor, they know their best is better than anyone else. And that confidence permeates through the rest of the roster with the Warriors and the rest of that group. And they know they're setting a tone that the rest of their teammates will follow and hopefully pick up some slack when they're having an off night throughout the season. So in year 3, there is no more dynamic duo in the league than Curry and Durant. And it's why there are so many people, when you watch them, that go, well, why in the world would Kevin Durant want to leave in 7 or 8 months after the season ends? So, obviously, it's the end of October. There are a lot of storylines left to play out here. But with where they are, they know just how talented they are. And there is a comfort with that. And I think that's what Steve Kerr was trying to explain after last night's game.
It's kind of like the Stacey King story. When I talked to him about this on NBA radio, he said the worst thing that I did in my career is leave the Bulls, because he felt coming out of Oklahoma, he was the man, and he was. He was a great player in college, and he thought that Phil Jackson was not necessarily using him enough. And clearly, there's other stars that were on that team, but he thought he could average 20 a night. So he goes to Minnesota, right, and he says it was the worst thing he's ever done. And so the same question I would have for you regarding the Warriors, because you've heard the whispers like I've heard. There's so many free agents that are really seriously now looking at New York as a spot to go to open up their own shop. They see Porzingis. They see the opportunity. I think that, to a man, everyone respects Fizdale as a head coach. So, I mean, the way Durant is, do you really see him as a Golden State lifer?
I don't see him as a lifer, Hoodie, because I think at 30 years old, he's still trying to figure out what he wants to do exactly in what will go down as a Hall of Fame career. I don't see him staying for the rest of his career in the Bay. Having said that, with the way this group is being constructed and knowing that they're going into a sparkling new arena next season in San Francisco, I'd be surprised, as we sit here right now, 2 weeks into the regular season, if he ends up leaving this summer. I think he may leave at some point, but there's just so much talent and so many good things within this roster that I think it'd be tough for him to leave in the moment. Now, having said that, I am sure there's a part of him. I'm sure there's a part of him that thinks, okay, well, I want to go try to be the number one guy again, because no matter what Kevin Durant does from here on out, he's never going to be the number one guy with this group. That will always, always, always be Steph Curry. So if there's a part of him that wants that new challenge, then that's what he's going to have to figure out over time. But, you know, just in being around this group the last month, I talked to Draymond Green about this the other day. They all know what's on the line. They all know that it's a possibility he may end up in New York or elsewhere. But that's why they seem truly focused on finishing the business of winning yet another title this year, and then letting the chips fall wherever they may once free agency begins.
They'd have to push me out the door. I'd be holding on so hard and win as many championships as possible. I mean, I could do it. And I guess the follow-up to that is, because you've had a one-on-one conversation, many of them, with Durant since you've been out there, he just seems brooding to me. Like, he should be happy. And still, I'm glad he's starting to kind of block some of his followers now that are hating on him, because I know social media is so big for him. But, man, he should be really happy with the choices that he made. Championship situation, being with the Golden State Warriors, it just still seems like there's a rock still in his shoe.
Well, I think part of that is because he's learning how to handle this all himself. And my point there, Hoodie, is a lot of guys, they tell you they don't pay attention to stuff, or they don't hear or listen to what's going on. And you and I know that's BS. Mm-hmm. And Durant is more open with, hey, you know, this stuff, it does bother me. And I wish there are times that I didn't care so much. And I think Durant, just in talking to him over the last month here, I think he's becoming more comfortable within his own skin, within the basketball bubble. And the fact that that's happening right now, to me, only means good things for the Warriors in the short term. I would just be really surprised. I know what I talked to him about, and he's discussing being more transparent about free agency, but I'd be really surprised if, when push comes to shove, if they do stay healthy and they win another title, if Durant were to leave, because I think he is comfortable within this team setting. And it's the old, the grass is always greener on the other side. Okay, maybe it's New York, wherever he would want to go. It's never going to be like it is right now. So if his ego can handle that he's just never going to be the number one guy on this team, then he has nothing else to worry about, because everything else from a basketball perspective and seemingly from a life perspective for him in the Bay Area, everything else is in place in the moment right now with the Warriors.
Nick Friedel covers the NBA for ESPN.com. He joins me, Jonathan Hood, on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. Did the Ty Lue firing surprise you over the weekend?
No. The Cavs, what surprised me looking back on all this is that the Cavs signed Kevin Love hoodie. It never made sense to me at the time. There are people who say, okay, well, you know, they were hoping he could turn into an asset, and now he has a toe injury and he's out at least a month. So I never understood the direction they were going. They are going to be in full tank mode here very soon. So with that in mind, if you're Ty Lue and you want a title and you're a proud NBA veteran, just get out now. It's just not worth it. And from the organization standpoint, it's not worth it because you've got a coach that's used to competing in the playoffs and has won a title for you. He don't want to go through the full rebuild. So I couldn't believe that they've made some of the choices they've already made. But as far as Lue specifically, that did not surprise me at all. And it certainly didn't surprise Steve Kerr, who said it best, you're never surprised anymore by anything that happens in the league.
Let it not be said that you know how to read the tea leaves well, because as you saw the neighborhood going down with the spray paint and people throwing garbage on their lawns, you left Chicago quickly. As you saw the neighborhood going down, you knew that the Bulls neighborhood was not going in the right direction. And so now you've left Malika in a ghetto here covering this Bulls team, because here we are with Markkanen being out. You see what's happened with Chris Dunn being out. There's Valentine, there's Portis. So I'll ask you again, like I asked you this past summer, do you feel that Fred Hoiberg will still be in position as a head coach by the end of the season?
I'd be shocked, Hoodie. I'd just be shocked. And so much of this is in your perspective. If you are a fan of Fred, you're saying you're in year two of a rebuild, and is seemingly his whole roster of top guys minus Zach LaVine, who's played pretty well to start, and Wendell Carter Jr., who's finding his way in his rookie season, everybody else is hurt. And there's the flip side that says, well, in 4 years, he's never really produced a winner, and no team has ever really done much, and this group 4 years into this still doesn't have a consistent identity. No matter which side of the fence you're on in the argument, the reality is, when push comes to shove, I would be shocked if Fred is still the coach of this team at the end of the season, whether it happens in season or whether the decision is made right after the season. I'd be stunned if Fred were the Bulls coach to start next year. I think they need a fresh direction. And frankly, I mean, I don't know if it should stop there in the moment. Hoodie, we've covered the Bulls for so long. Jerry Reinsdorf, Michael Reinsdorf, they're loyal to the front office. But I think the constant frustration from within the fan base has always been, especially in the last few years, what direction are they going? And if this team yet again is going downhill and not winning a lot of games, I think there are a lot of people that would love to see the entire house being cleaned, everything. And I don't know what the Reinsdorfs will decide at that point, but that's why it's so important to see how the rest of this season and the progression of younger players like LaVine, like Markkanen when he gets back on the floor, like Portis, who's in a contract year. How do those guys develop? But in the short term, specific to Fred, I'd just be stunned if he were there to start next season.
They can clean a whole house, and all of a sudden they see in the corner, oh, wait, Pete Myers is still here.
Oh, buddy, I missed you.
I was just saying, wait a minute. I thought this place was spick and span. Look at this. It's supposed to be actually clean. Wait, there's still Pete Myers here. It's not clean. Is Randy Brown still here? Wait a minute. My friend, as always, I appreciate it, and I'm so glad to hear you back on the show with us. And we'll find you again on your travels across the across this great country as you cover Beyonce like a blanket.
Anytime, my man. You know I love you, and it's always good to be with you.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. Nick Friedel covers the NBA for ESPN.com. He joins us here on Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood.
From your hood to J-Hood.
I excel, then prevail. Your mic is contacted, I attract clientele.
On ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. You're listening to Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
Okay, the Bulls lose in grand fashion to the Golden State Warriors. My goodness. That was not just a loss. That was just a beatdown of epic proportions. But when you're the Bulls and when you're Golden State, that's what it looks like, right? Real quick, Eric, on the poll question at ESPN 1000, what is leading when it comes to Bulls Nation, hashtag, what is the leading right now?
All right, so the options are crying laughing emoji, facepalm emoji, poop emoji, and death emoji. With 40%, the poop emoji is winning.
Okay, that's all right. Vote early, vote often at ESPN 1000 at Tweet J Hood. We thank you for listening and being part of the program here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. Our thanks to you for listening. Our thanks to Alex Brown, Bill Michaels, Dave Burkett, Henry Lake, and Nick Friedel, show produced by Eric and Felix on the other side of the glass. We'll do this tomorrow, 7 to 10. We'll do a deeper dive on the Bears as they get ready to take on the Buffalo Bills. Some Bulls conversation as well, some NBA conversation. Boy, it's so bad, the Bulls tonight. Look forward to more as we move forward here. 7 to 10 tomorrow night. Let's do this right here on Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood. Don't forget to download the podcast, Under the Hood. I played that earlier.
As I combine all the juice from the mind, heal up, wheel up, bring it back, come rewind.
Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000.